Hi folks, this is Tony for the A Minute to Midnight show, and today on the show I am joined by Fred from ET Prepper YouTube channel and Mike from the On Point Preparedness YouTube channel, and it's awesome. I think we're going to have a great show, three of us with three different perspectives and ideas on why we should be preparing. Is it scriptural? What are we preparing for? And a little bit about how do we prepare. So it's great to be talking to you guys today. How's it going there, Fred?
Very good, Tony. I'm kind of excited for the show today because I've got a lot to share, and I can talk a lot. I could talk everybody's ear off right now about the subject.
And Mike, it's good to be having you again online with us too.
I'm happy you brought me in for this particular topic. I've been doing mostly Bible teachings and prophecy, so it's nice to get back to sort of the roots of my channel, which was all founded in preparedness before I got saved. So I like bringing this back.
It's kind of, there's always so many kind of heavy things to talk about and scriptural things, and we will be talking scriptural stuff here, but I would like it to, you know, kind of be something that's fun in a way. And I think this is potentially preparing, and talking about preparing is actually a fun topic in some ways. It's serious, but it's kind of fun.
Yep. Yeah, and if I say something and I screw up, I'm okay with saying something stupid versus if I'm dealing with the Word of God. That's a lot different.
This is a little easier.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we'll maybe have a look, though, first off at, is it scriptural to prepare? What do you think, Fred?
Well, yeah, no doubt. I've got a few verses here that I'm going to read, and we'll just start with the Proverbs 22:3. The prudent sees danger and hides himself, but the simple go on and suffer for it. Luke 12:47. The servant who knew his master's will but did not get ready or act according to his will receive a severe beating. And I think we all can see the you know, we know the master's will. In other words, we know that there's stuff happening. There's economically, the house of cards about to come down. This debt just cannot be sustained. They're doing a good job of it, though. And then we've got the wars, rumors of wars, and then the morality is just in the tank more than I've ever seen. So now the next one, Proverbs 27:1, do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring. And then who knows, here one day, gone the next. And my brother-in-law just died in an accident. And, you know, he was at a gathering, and then they were going home, and boom, he's gone. And they are not prepared. And who can prepare for something like that? And that's actually something we got to consider, is our loved ones might perish. I know that's kind of heavy and kind of like, what? But in a super big emergency, I say emergency or SHTF, whatever you want to call it, there's going to be people that die. And when that happens, are we emotionally prepared? And I can answer that, no. it just is not. Nobody is until the hammer drops, and then it's just something that one needs to think about, is losing others that you love and care for, and keep on going on, and that's the point, because it's usually not just about you. You got to keep on going on for others, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I'll give to Mike in a sec, but yeah, along those lines, Matthew 24:42-43 basically says, therefore be on the alert, for you do not know which day your Lord is coming, but be sure of this, if the head of the house had known at what time of the night the thief was coming, he would have been on the alert and would not have allowed his house to be broken into. So, I mean, you could say, okay, that's, you know, security, or you could spiritualize it. But it's kind of being prepared anyway, isn't it? So, Mike, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I've gotten the response that, oh, you have no faith. because you're preparing. Don't you think that God will bring you manna from heaven just like he did with the Israelites and all that? But you had to remember stories like Joseph, and he interpreted Pharaoh's dream of 7 lean cows and 7 fat cows, and he stored up grain. And if it was not for his faith in preparing and storing grain, then him and his family would have died, because that's how they actually all got reunited again, was they had to go to Egypt to get food. And it was only because of Joseph's prepping, so to say, that they had food. Or sort of the satirical story is like Noah. So it's not like God said, hey, Noah, go to Mount Everest and just, you know, you sit up there and just chill out and let me do this thing. No, as an act of faith for quite a long time, he had to build the ark and probably suffer all sorts of mockery and ridicule and everything, but he built it in faith because he knew that's, you know, what God was requesting of him. And so it's undeniable across the Christian communities, there's lots of people preparing. People know that something is about to go down. And just with all the verses that Fred shared, it is prudent for us to do so. And it's not just for ourselves, but it's also for others, that we might be a refuge and be able to preach the gospel to them. And I will highlight on Fred's topic about being physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually prepared. You know, we need to think about all these things. There was a lady that I had on my show that gave her testimony of being in a car crash with her family, and her 4-year-old daughter, actually, the car got flipped upside down, and her daughter drowned in the very sight of her and her husband. And, you know, very tragic testimony. But she specifically came on my show because she wanted to help people understand how she processed the whole thing, because she feels like us, that people will have to deal with these types of events as we get into this era.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Noah, and in Genesis 6:21 it says, as for you, take for yourself some of all food which is edible, and gather it to yourself, and it shall be food for you and for them, meaning the animals. So God did. He actually got Noah to prepare and store food. So to say that if you do prepping of any sort of that you haven't got faith because God will provide is pretty much contradicted by what God asked Noah to do anyway. And you mentioned Joseph, of course, and they're two great examples. So Fred, have you got any more thoughts?
Yeah, actually, on the same line, I was in a boat wreck, and a girl died. And one of the reasons why, actually, I was back before I was married, I was going to ask her out. It was actually a church camp for one of the big mega churches that I don't go to anymore. Anyway, there was 28 people on this huge pontoon boat, and the boat went down, and then it capsized in an instant. And when I came up, now I've been through other traumatic things in life, so they don't affect me like they affect others that haven't been through stuff before. Out of the 28 people, okay, well, there was a tarp over the boat. When I came up, there was a guy standing on the boat counting heads. I thought I was down for just a second. And that just shows, it was just like being in a washing machine with all these people. The point I'm trying to make is when I came up, I was like on full tilt. By the time I surfaced, I'm ready to go to help, whatever. 26 people were bobbing in the water, clueless, just in Never Never Land. One of the reasons why I have my channel is to help these people think this stuff through. If you think this stuff through, it helps you prepare mentally. If you're prepared mentally, then you can work your plan, if you have a plan or whatever. I was just amazed at how everybody was basically useless. They were treading water, and that was it. And they just couldn't help anything. And that was a tragedy. And then think about 9/11. You remember hearing reports that people were still at their desk when the building was coming down? They were just looking at their monitor and they just couldn't believe this was happening. And one of the reasons, again, I want to help people be able to process some heavy stuff if they think about this, or at least give it a little bit of thought. And then, if this happened, what would I do? I would do this. Okay. Well, then let's say something big, major, mega happens. At least that thought process is there to help them not lock up. If they mentally lock up, it could be lethal.
Really good points. That's really good points. Mike, what have you got any thoughts on there?
Yeah, you never know how you're going to react. All right, there's the fight, flight, freeze. There's actually, I think, submit is another one in there. And the only thing you can do is what Fred said. You know, you just try and train your mind. You cognizantly look at some of these situations that people have been through, like Fred's, or like Sarah, who was the mother of that four-year-old that drowned in her car. And you sort of, you don't want to be morbid about it, but you have to mentally think about, you know, how can I emotionally process this? In the event itself, how can I get out of that shock moment? It's really a training thing. Even in the, maybe this will be something that we talk about in this show about Christians and firearms and whether we think that's right or not, but I've got my concealed carry license, and I know that's a big thing. We talk about this thing called the OODA loop, and you know, not being stuck in this state of mind where you don't know what's going on. You try to process what's happening as quickly as possible so you know how to react effectively and efficiently.
I guess in terms of the firearms thing, because that's going to vary from country to country and even state to state about what the law is. See, in New Zealand, we can't do that. So there is no such thing as conceal and carry. Or in fact, it's illegal to use firearms for self-defense in New Zealand, which is, you know, I've got to be careful I don't get myself into trouble talking about this too much, you know. So it's one of those things. You can certainly use firearms for hunting in New Zealand, you know, if you've got a license, but it's most of the world is nowhere near as liberal as America in terms of firearms licenses. So, but you've got to be able to, hunt for food if it got that desperate. So, you know, that's probably, definitely an avenue that people need to consider.
I kind of netted out in my mind what is prepping? And I think basically, I'm going to throw this out there and let me know what you think. Prepping is about having a plan and the resources to execute that plan. That makes sense? Does it kind of put it in a nutshell?
Yep.
And, you know, I wrote some other things here. Kind of like, why do we do this? You know, why am I, my family thinks I'm a nutcase. Well, they're probably right, but okay. Not that bad though. But, you know, but why do we do this? Why do we prep? And okay, I used to sell insurance many moons ago, and it's life continuation insurance, because like you have car insurance, right? Or house insurance or renter's insurance. And some people even have life insurance. I just call this life continuation insurance. Like for my sister that just lost her husband. Well, if they had preps, you know, she's got food, she's got resources to draw upon in that emergency. And so why not have a insurance plan for life continuation? But even the government is telling us to prep. Okay, for all these years, I started prepping basically for Y2K. I don't know if you remember that or not.
Yeah.
And then that came and passed, and I expected it to pass. But I wanted it. I wanted to be ready in case something. You know, just for my convenience. And then, you know, the thinking comes into play more and more, and about this prepping and if this happens or that happens, and to be ready. So you hear the government telling us to prep. And I'm suggesting, look, don't you want life to continue as normal as possible? Well, then you should prep. Trump just made September, the month of September, preparedness month. And then Ben Franklin says, by failing to prepare, you are preparing to fail. So don't fail to prepare.
Yeah, good points. And, you know, we can look at what are we preparing for. I think back to here in New Zealand with Christchurch in 2011 when there was a major earthquake. And most people weren't prepared. And, you know, it was a disaster in Christchurch, complete disaster zone. And people couldn't get money out of ATMs. Things were closed, supermarkets and all that. Everything had fallen off shelves and stuff was busted. And there was liquefaction, you know, flooding and stuff coming out of the ground. And people were just dependent on others to come rescue them. But it's not just like it lasted for a day, you know. The after effects of Christchurch are still ongoing today. I mean, obviously, in terms of building and so on, they're having to rebuild much of it. But I think that's a wake-up call, is that a natural disaster can hit, and if you aren't prepared, you are then depending on somebody else to rescue you, help you, get you through, and that could be days away, if at all, depending on the type of disaster. And then you've got these disasters in the US with hurricanes and different things that have come through, and there are so many things. And you mentioned economic collapse, which I think all three of us agree is coming at some point, don't we? So, you know, there's short-term prepping and there's long-term prepping, I guess. So, Mike, I just wonder what your thoughts are on what we're preparing for and any thoughts you've got around it.
Yeah, I think everybody needs to just generally prepare, because there's a whole lot of things that are common regardless of what you're specifically prepping for. And the way that I do this is I think you need to get organized. And so one of the things that I do is I have like Evernote or some type of electronic notepad, and I've segregated all these different categories on things that I want to prepare. So some of my categories are air, shelter, water, food, finances, security, medical hygiene, health, communications, travel planning, and then lastly is community, mental, emotional, and faith. And each one of these can get bracketed into subdivisions. So if you think about shelter, that can be split into your primary home, the clothes that you wear, your bug out location. If you live in a desert region, do you have ways to cool yourself? Or if you live in a place that's going to be cold, do you have a wood stove? You know, you can tease these out into all these different subcategories and sort of take a look at the lay of the land. Figure out your finances and say, okay, because obviously we don't have unlimited funds here. A lot of people that message me say, I've got no money. You know, where do I start? You got to tease it all out, look at your blueprint and say, okay, where am I going to put my money? And once you got the basics covered, again, because we all need shelter, we all need water, we all need food, then you can start thinking about some of these specifics. And Tony, you brought up a really good point that I was actually intending on making was, there's a lot of people out there that are saying, okay, I'm canning. I got tons of canned goods. Remember, those are in like ball glass jars. What if there's an earthquake and everything that you've been canning goes to crap? It just all falls off the shelves and it's busted up. Well, you're done. All that work, all those years of work, you're done. And so you really got to think about things like this. Like, do I need cargo netting on my shelves? Should my shelves be anchored to the walls or to the floor? Another thing is you start to prep and start to accumulate all these supplies. It can actually lead to bondage. So something may happen where you're going to need to bug out. You can't stay and get all your gear. There's going to be an emotional attachment to say, oh, you know, no one else has been prepping for years like I have, but I can't leave my stuff. This is like running back into the fire to try and save your stuff, and you get burned up in the process. All these things you need to think about. But and actually, just to throw in a little bit of a faith thing in here, I think as men, you know, we want to be a savior. We want to be a hero. And so naturally, when I think about prepping, I'm like, oh, I'm the only one in my community that's prepping. All these people are going to be looking to me for guidance. And, oh, Mike, how did you know about this and all that stuff? So that's Mike's vision. God's vision might be where everything gets burned up. And then he's like, okay, Michael, now what? Are you going to trust me? You know, who knows? That's why at the end of the day, spiritual faith is of utmost importance. But just to recap, you know, I would suggest that everyone bracket out everything that you need to do, figure out how much money you're going to put towards this, and then start, you know, looking at some of these basic categories like your water, your food, and your shelter.
Those are very, very good points. In fact, there's two types of prepping, really, in a sense there. There's the prepping to stay in, and then there's the prepping to bug out. Or you could be somewhere when the disaster or whatever happens, and you're miles away from your supplies. So that's where bug out bags and so on become useful. So do you guys both have bug out bags? I mean, I keep one permanently in my car. It's not huge, but it'll be enough to, you know, do 3 days probably. And if you have to walk home or something, it probably be hungry by the end of the end, but there's a bit of food in there and that sort of thing. So what do you guys think? Are bug out bags important?
Oh, yeah. Fred, did you want to go?
Yeah. They're crucial. And actually, that's another video that, even though there's a lot of videos out there on bug out bags, I've kind of got educated from watching them, and some people are real hung up on the equipment and having everything duplicated inside their bag, and they need a pickup truck to drive their bag. what I want to do is have two bags, a bug out bag light and a bug out bag complete. Someday I'll make a video on this. And the purpose of that is kind of a light one. If I'm going to be traveling close to home, you know, within say 50 miles or something, then it'd be a light one that I don't need. I can draw from the bag itself with what I need to do to get home and then regroup. Bug out bag complete was, well, actually, let me digress just a little bit. A couple of years ago, we went to a conference, and this one lady has been to 17 natural disasters, including 9/11 and countries collapsing and just some real wicked bad things. And she was, you know, when you say a 72-hour bag, she starts foaming at the mouth almost, because she's like, no, you need to have the tools and the know-how to live for an extended period of time with that bag. So that's the premise that I have. So I've got some tools in there to go more than 72 hours. I guess the bug out bag light would be like the 72-hour bag, but the complete one would be one that's got, of course, it's got like day tricks and stuff like that for food and then a little bit of water in there. But a lot of tools and a lot of things to like a little tent in there and a little bag, you know, the Mylar foil to keep the heat. All those different tools in there to keep me going for a long extended period of time. That's the goal with my bag. And also it's got to be light, it's got to be comfortable, and it's like Mike says, it's got to be organized too, to try and, you know, it to just dump everything in the bag, well, that's at least you've got it, but to have easy quick access is good too, to have it all organized well, and the bare minimum. I just recently bought an axe to go into my bug out bag. The axe to me is one of the most important tools in that bag, because it's a hammer and it chops stuff. There's a lot of things you can use it as protection. There's just a whole bunch of reasons to have a good little axe. So that's kind of my little take on that.
It would be actually quite good if we could even chuck a few photos in the video here. You know, like you could send a picture of the axe. What sort of axe? People are going to go, are we looking at a big axe? Are we looking at a tomahawk? You know, this sort of thing, just to give some people some ideas on some of these things, might be quite good. So, Mike, what are you got any more thoughts on that, on the bug out?
Yeah, there is. I'll also note that along with the bracketing of all the categories that I do, it's really good to keep a paper inventory of what you have in all these bags, because a lot of people have multiple bags, right? You've got your get home bag, your bug out bag. There's something called an inch bag, which is I'm never coming home. Maybe that's your complete bag, Fred. I started to notice that, you know, and you've got bags for multiple family members, right? If you actually start to fill all these up, you forget what's in them if you haven't touched them for a while. So it's always good to inventory them. The second thing is, and I don't know how well this is going to work out in practice, but at least in my mind, it makes sense. I've got like a 4-tier bug out plan. So my very first tier is obviously the car. I'm going to try to load that up as much as possible. But who knows in my travel planning what I'm going to come up against. So I may have to ditch the car. And so one of the things that I'm going to have on our van is I've got bicycle carts, or some people know like the child carts that hold like 2 or 3 kids on the back. My next tier is maybe to just use the bicycles that I can load up my family and some gear. Again, I've got some mobility on wheels that will take off some of the weight. So maybe I can use those to get a little bit further out than I would on foot. If those don't work, I can go to the next tier, which is being on foot, but a lot of these bicycle carts, you can still push by hand. So I can still take a whole lot of weight off my shoulders and be, you know, pushing these carts. Now, a lot of people say that there's some issues with this whole gray man approach, that obviously if you're the only dude with a whole bunch of gear on a cart, that you're going to be singled out and taken over. But hopefully, you know, with you driving or bicycling out, you've gotten to a remote enough area that that's not much of a problem. And then last but not least, which is a place that you definitely don't want to be, is just having the gear on your back. Unless you got some serious wildlife skills, you know, the stuff that you've got on your back is not necessarily going to let you survive long term. Again, unless you have some really good bushcraft skills, odds are you're going to have to start scavenging or be closer to some populated areas and get supplies.
Good points. All very good points. Okay, so now what about the staying in? So we've looked at the bug out, which, you know, there's various scenarios there. It could be that you're stuck somewhere and you just have to get home and your place is a safe place. Or it could be that you have to get out of your home because your home's being wiped out, or whatever the situation is. This is why there are so many different possibilities. But let's just say you know, your disaster is somewhere you can stay home. The electricity's out maybe, or whatever, and there's been an earthquake or a whatever it is, flooding somewhere else, and you're stuck. So we could look at what sort of things do we do there. Fred, would you like to kick us off?
Sure. The home is, well, I had the I guess I'll call it the luxury of being able to move to a place where it's hard to live. And that would be the desert. One guy, I don't know if you know John Shorey, but he made a point. He says, live where it's hard to live, thrive where it's hard to live, and the chances of survival are much better. Because it's, you know, people aren't, if you hear people that talk about bugging out or whatever, they're always heading to the mountains, you know. So if you got your little cabin in the mountains and you're going to stay in there, there's a chance that in a big situation, there's going to be visitors. And you know what? That's great if you're prepared for them. As far as being at home, there's a few things that I have to be concerned about. Being in the desert, water is a big one. I don't have any streams trickling down in the back. Also, if the atmosphere gets polluted in a great way, the underground water is the way to go. So that would be a well. I've got a very good well, but I've got to have I've got to be able to get that water out of the ground, which takes electricity. So I've got a couple of generators that I can use to do that. So that's the water is kind of covered there. Also, I plan on, if the Lord gives us enough time, to have rainwater catchment as well until that doesn't work anymore with the pollution. But that way I've got a double system. Plus I plan on storing some as well. As far as food goes, we've got some food stored away, and we've got kind of the Mike, you had mentioned all those different, I call them the kind of the prepper stool. You've got all these different facets of prepping, and each one of those is kind of covered by either equipment or supplies that we have. I just ordered 3 cases, 96 rolls of toilet paper in a case. Well, that's kind of laughable, but actually it's great barter material, and it's incredibly cheap. Plus it's cheaper to buy that way anyway, something that you use. So we've been doing this for quite a while, and we've had the luxury of time to do this and collect things as we go that would, if you shut the grid off, that's going to be the first thing, at least in my mind, that's going to go, and how can we operate outside that?
And you raise a good point there. I was saying, you're saying you're in the desert and water is, the main thing. And yet for me here in New Zealand, it's the opposite of a desert, really. And, there is plenty of water. But the thing is, the water could get polluted. So then, you've got to be able to do something with the water to make it usable. So, have people got water filtration systems or even life straws, at a very basic level and different things. So it's not likely to be a shortage of water in itself here, but, there's no guarantee that water would be drinkable without, some preparation if there was something that took the power grid down. Like the Christchurch earthquake did in Christchurch, for example, and water was a big thing for people in Christchurch. So, and then Mike, what about you? What are your thoughts? And because you're in a completely different place again, you're not in a desert either.
Right. Yeah, I'm in the middle of some cornfields, but we're just a short shot away from the highway and some other urban areas. So I've always just had this gut feeling like I'm going to have to escape this area at some point in time. There's just too many people. And if you're lucky enough, again, to be isolated in some remote area, there's a lot of things to consider, right? I mean, community is a big one. If you can get other people in your community on board and you can start prepping together and figure out, how do we protect our homestead and things like that. But I think individually, people know the situation that they live in, and they can start to think about, how to best protect it, in terms of my water requirements, disaster requirements, in terms of it's like a volcano, the people in Hawaii, obviously they may or may not have been expecting that, earthquakes. Really, I mean, honestly, that's the best place to be though. I mean, in terms of bugging out versus bugging in, absolutely no question, is probably the best. The thing that I worry about the most is, FEMA or some type of government agency, if there's riots or natural disasters or whatnot, they're going to go street by street, clearing out houses, just sort of like what we saw with the Boston bombing. There was absolutely no protection of privacy. They just went in everyone's home and forced you out. So the key is just to hope that doesn't happen. And if it does, get out before it does.
That's a point. I mean, there's no fail-safe plans. This is why I think we all need to individually be asking God, what do we do as individuals? And people that are listening, the same, I don't know. Some people that are listening will probably be prepared to the max, and other people will be listening and go, they haven't done anything to prepare.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a wide section of people that are listening to this. And on our website, aminutetomidnight.com, we have actually a few good articles on various aspects of prepping, some that Matt wrote, who's part of the A Minute to Midnight team, and, you know, he's a great prepper, and I've written the odd one as well, and I know you guys have done, Mike, you've got some great ones and things too, but I just, one article that I did on the website, and I can't actually remember the name of it, but you can find it under Survival and Prepping on aminutetomidnight.com, and I won't go into every little, I'll just give you the main headings, but I kind of said preparing for what might happen during an economic collapse, because that's one disaster situation, and I've written down 10 things, and you can read more about the 10 things, but here is those 10 things. One, food shortages can happen, so you know, what are you going to do about that? Two, medicine may become scarce during an economic collapse or any other disaster for that matter, so what are you going to do? What's your plan for that? Three, when an economy collapses, so might the power grid. Again, a power grid could go down from other things, so you've got to be prepared for that. Four, during an economic collapse, you cannot even take water for granted. So we've just talked about water. We've got to be prepared with water in whatever way you're going to be prepared for that. Five, during an economic crisis, your credit cards and debit cards may stop working. And I say all of these points can happen with not just economic collapse, but other disasters. Six, crime, rioting and looting can become commonplace during an economic collapse. Seven, during a financial collapse, many people will start bartering. So that's something we can talk about a little bit, is bartering. Eight, your currency may rapidly lose value during an economic collapse. So the New Zealand dollar or the US dollar could become hyperinflated and virtually worthless quickly. Nine, you cannot be sure of continuous employment or ongoing business. So have you got any preparations? You know, how are you going to survive beyond a few days in that situation? And 10, the government will not save you. So let's think for a minute. What about bartering, guys? That was one of the things. Do you have any ideas around that, Fred?
Certain things are of high value. Like I was mentioning, the toilet paper a moment ago. Another one that somebody that went through the Bosnian mess years ago, they said one of the most high value things was a lighter to be able to make fire. I just bought, well, I say I just bought, I've got a couple of hundred, like the Bic style lighters, disposable lighters. And they were like $17 for 100 or something like that. It's just crazy cheap right now. But after the fact, they're going to be terribly expensive. There's other things that I have, like knife sharpeners, little ceramic knife sharpeners. They're peanuts. They're nothing. But if you can't get them anymore and you need a way to sharpen a knife, you know, now that thing is of value. I've got grain stored, quite a bit of grain, and that is of value when people are hungry. So I had, you know, I probably got a lot of odd jobs that I can give people. I know I do. And, you know, I can pay them with grain. I can pay them with a knife sharpener or whatever. Or if they have something that I need, then I can work it out where I've got this or that or the other thing. I've got multiple items of things that I think might be of high value in a situation that there is no more. But that's the bartering, I think, comes down the road a little bit beyond the labor. In other words, people's skills are barterable. Now I've got things that I can barter with as well, but I've got a pretty good skill set and lots of tools and stuff like that to be able to build or help somebody do a project that they need to do. So that's something, the bartering is something that's is terribly important to look at your skill set. Just what can you barter? I mean, are you good at the computer and making lots of money? Well, you better figure out how to fix a drain or saw some wood or do some other physical type activities, because there's going to be a lot of the cerebral stuff that goes away, if that makes sense.
Does. And yeah, the lighters is a good one. I've thought of that. And also those little fire sticks. So I can't even think what you call them, you know, the little a flint and your, you know, the, I've got a few of those. You can pick them up. You know, there's some high expensive brands, but you can pick up some really cheap ones that'll do the job quite well too. So I've started thinking, every now and then I'll pick up a few of those, because they'll be, you know, invaluable as well. And I've also been thinking coffee, you know. Well, coffee's going to be something that, you know, I think would be – obviously you don't need coffee to survive, but it's kind of something that most of us depend on. I know I do. And but you can't – instant coffee's not going to last that long, and coffee beans are only going to – if they're roasted, are only going to last so long. So I've been actually thinking, what about – you know, green beans and how long they can store. And I haven't actually started on this yet. This has been something in my mind the last few days. You know, I've been able to grind and roast coffee, and that could be one. Because I think green beans, if you're stored right, you can store them for a long time. So whereas coffee, if it's been roasted, is, you know, doesn't keep very long. So that's just one of my things to be going down the track of. Maybe if any people are listening to this and have got ideas about storing green coffee beans and all those kinds of things, let us know. Mike, have you got any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'll talk about bartering in a second, but just when you were talking about coffee, one of the things I have, I was talking about all the different categories, and one of them was mental. And aside from just mentally processing things and things like that, I've also purchased caffeine pills, and I put that in my bug out bag. Because there may be times where you're going to need to stay up, you know, maybe multiple nights and days, and you're not going to be able to have time to have a cup of brew. You know, you're going to have some caffeine pills. And then on the flip side of that, you might have bouts of insomnia. And so it might be good to have some melatonin pills. And so you can think about, you know, mental preparedness in terms of that, in that regard. But for bartering, it's something that I know will probably happen on a small scale. But when I was first a prepper, I just thought that this was economic collapse and it was going to be devastating. And I never really thought about the end times. But now that I'm getting more into prophecy and more into Bible study and seeing the signs of the times, I keep on going back to Matthew 24, where it's saying, you know, as in the days of Noah, so shall it be for the coming of the Son of Man. And the days of Noah were horrendous, and basically all humanity was wiped out in a year. So odds are, this time being worse around, because unless God stops it, no flesh would be saved. This is probably going to be pretty traumatic. And I don't know how a lot of my original prepper thoughts would hold under this new frame of mind. And what I mean by that is, you know, some preppers will talk about bartering and they'll say, oh, get junk silver. And so I do own silver and I do own gold, but I don't own junk silver. And you can think about, right, if we're in like the days of Noah and maybe people do need some supplies, just me personally, I don't think that they're going to look at your dimes and nickels and you're going to say, these are 90% silver. you know, why don't you have some? They're going to be like, no, I need a lighter. I need tangible hard assets that are going to help me survive. If there's even opportunity for that to occur, because I mean, who knows how bad this is really going to get?
Yeah, that's interesting points. I too believe in silver and you know, having silver is an important part, I think, of being prepared. That's personally where I suppose I started from, in a sense. Not that I've got a heck of a lot, because I've never had a lot of money, but. I do think if people can have, you know, once they've got their other things sorted, that's kind of an important part, because we don't know how the economic collapse will play out. And I do suspect that there will be a period of time where precious metals are going to be a huge value to, you know, the changing over of systems. When it gets to the very depth of the end times, I mean, who can be prepared for that? Really, we will be depending on God entirely at that point. But we don't know how far away it is till we get to that, or how many stages there are on the way to that. this is where the preparations come in, I think, for the, well, the more run-of-the-mill disasters. And if the, you know what I mean, not downplaying them, but the absolute depth of the great tribulation, if we're here and if there hasn't been some rapture first, and that's a whole different subject, which we won't go into, but just if we're here during that period of time, I don't think any of our preparations are going to cut it. But we don't know what is leading up to that, and how much time there is. And our forefathers had to get through disasters, and preparedness definitely helped them. And many people still died, you know, even in the early 20th century with the Great Depression and all of that, when it was a more agricultural climate and people were better prepared than they are today, people still died. So that's unfortunately the reality. So I think our preparations could be definitely very useful for, you know, the lead up periods anyway. That's my thoughts. Fred.
And Tony.
Mike, I did have sorry. One more, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Just one more quick thing. Just as we're talking about bartering, you know, a lot of people think it in the context of trading one physical good for another physical good, or maybe like a particular skill set. But another thing to consider is, again, if there's roadblocks, if there is some type of government force that is controlling certain areas or regions, you know, you may not be able to buy them off with lighters and things like that, because they are still in the semblance of government. They still may want money. And so if you're trying to get to your bug out location and there's roadblocks, if you think about bartering in the context of safe passage, you may be able to buy off some of these people. It certainly happens. I know from a lot of my military friends in Afghanistan and stuff, they buy off a lot of these security patrols that are, you know, putting blockades along roads, but giving them silver, giving them gold, giving them cash. I think things of monetary value would buy them off a lot easier than it would be trying to give them food or other things, because they're probably higher up in that government system and are getting those things provided to them by the government.
Those are very good points. Absolutely. Yeah. And diversification, I think, is important. You know, I'm just thinking even in terms of lighting, you know. How are you going to light, if you're still in your home, say, how do you light your place, you know? Have you got everything sorted into one area? Because you may not have electricity. So having other alternatives, solar lighting, for example, things that you can power from the sun. But then, of course, if there's no sun, that's not going to work too well either. So then maybe you want to have some kerosene or paraffin lamps and candles, you know. So you've got not everything, just all your eggs in one basket. You've kind of got various different ways of lighting and so on and so forth. And the same with cooking. How are you going to do that? How are you going to cook if there's no electricity? Have you got gas cookers? Well, what happens when you run out of gas? You know, have you got other alternatives like fire and so on? Or, you know, if you're in somewhere where you can't make a big fire, have you got really small little fires? Like I've made videos on how to make little tin can fires to cook something really quickly. So it's just kind of all the different things to think through.
Yeah, and you know, going back to the water thing and the diversity, I think I've got one of those life straws and some other filters. But I just finished actually building a good-sized water distiller. Our water here is, you can float a penny on it. It's that bad. It's got a lot of minerals. And with this distiller, it'll take all that minerals out. And I'm concerned that with so many minerals, there might be a problem. But then if there's other pollutants that I need to be concerned about, the distillation will take care of that. And it's just a solar distiller. There's no power needed whatsoever other than getting the water into the distiller. It's big enough where I could get a couple of gallons a day and be able to support everybody in the household. And that's another thing too, is the household is kind of designed not just for us, but for other people too. I'm inviting people that I know here. If there's an emergency and they don't have anywhere to go, this might be a safe place for people.
With the distiller, you know, that's something I don't have one, but I've thought, because I live by the ocean, there's no shortage of seawater, but you can't drink seawater, but distilling it, you could. So that would be one option, I imagine, to be able to convert seawater even into drinking water.
Yeah, eventually I'm going to put out a video on that, and then that'll be on my channel. But that, you know, there's so many different facets of this that you know you can just go down rabbit trail after rabbit trail, and then you just you can end up with just a whole. I'm on 30 acres, and I could just fill up this whole 30 acres with prepping stuff, you know, in the end, when it really gets down to it, I think you were making a comment that, yeah, I don't think we can fathom everything that's coming our way. This, you know, I always try and wrap my mind around this, that, or the other thing, whatever the scenario could be that might affect my region. And when we move, well, there's not the, you know, which way does the wind blow? Well, down, I'm 80 miles north of the, or something like that, of the Holloman Air Force Base. And that is probably a target, you know, and there would be a lot of pollution from that. So, I mean, I considered the wind, and I considered all these things when in the move. So, I mean, with prepping, that everything that you can prep for, it can be overwhelming. And there's a point I wanted to make is, what level do you want to prep to? In other words, in thinking about each item, there's a range from mild trouble to like a total societal collapse, you know, with major peril. Like, usually the most peril we have is people. That's what's, you know, they'll come smiling at you and then you turn your back and there's the knife, stuff like that. And then I think, Mike, you mentioned the government, and you know, that's a real big peril when the time comes and we need to get all get marked one way or another. That's going to be a whole different ballgame, and everything that we have that we know is going to be out the window, and we're going to have to learn as we go in that time.
Yep, just basically reiterate what Fred said. There's this military quote which says, no plan survives first contact with the enemy. And so no matter how much you prepare, whatever's coming, I think it's going to shock us all. We'll sort of know that it was going to happen, but to the degree and maybe even pace that it does happen, I think it's just going to shock all of us. And so just make sure that we alluded to this earlier. Make sure your preparations don't put you into bondage. We talked about, you know, if your house catches fire and that's everything that you've been prepping for, obviously don't risk your life going back into it. But I started seeing this a little bit where my preparations were actually putting me into bondage. And what I mean by that is there are so many different categories, as I alluded to earlier, like firearms, medical, shelter, air, water, bushcraft skills, all this stuff. And it is absolutely impossible to become a master at all of those. I mean, you say, oh, I want to be a good marksman so I can hunt for food. I want to know wild edibles, so I got to study up on that. I need to know all my bushcraft skills and make fire by hand and, you know, build A-frame shelters and blah, 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 blah. You'll focus on one of those things and get proficient on it and move to the next. And then after some time, these are all decayable skills is what I'm saying here. And there's absolutely no way that you by yourself can remain proficient on all these things unless you basically let it consume your life. And just make sure that doesn't happen. Again, it's not necessarily fun to think about what's on the horizon, but as Tony said, I mean, just sort of make it fun, you know, just, do the best that you can, leave the rest in God's hands, and just see what comes and just roll with the punches. Just going back to that military quote, no plan survives first contact with the enemy. A lot of your plans are going to be completely destroyed whenever this thing happens, and you just have to be careful not to fall into despair.
And I think the person that's, you know, setting themselves to basically hunker down and bunker down and, you know, and protect their little plot, you know, from whoever, they'll, you know, they'll shoot anything in sight that comes near them, and they're planning to just look after the number one and not care for anyone else. I really don't think that God's going to, well, God will let a lot of those people get to their own devices and they'll fail. But those people that have a plan are thinking that they're preparing not just for themselves in mind, but, okay, God, how can you use me and my preparation to help other people? I think God's a lot more likely to bless those people and actually give them the insights that they need. And I think that's going to be really important, is actually having guidance from God as to what individually we should do, because it'll be different for every person. But don't get into the bondage, like you're saying, where it becomes consuming your whole life. And certainly don't get into it to the point where all you're thinking about is yourself. I don't think that's a Christian attitude.
Yep.
I think, Mike, that was a really good point. And the bondage thing, and you know, just kind of thinking through what you guys are saying and what I'm saying and stuff, we've said some pretty scary stuff to some people. Scare them to death, and that's not the intent. The intent here is to help people understand that, you know, we live in a fallen world. We live in a world that is just, it's wicked, and there's a lot of wicked people wanting to do wicked things, and they're in power, and of course Satan wants the whole system to come down and just destruction. But in you know, you read Revelation 6, and I believe those seals are just going to come one after another, bang, 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 and maybe multiple at the same time, and it will be overwhelming. But if we just have a reasonable plan to address some of these things, and a little bit at a time, and all this stuff can be overwhelming if you try and think through it all. But if you just have it, you know, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? You know, and the same goes with prepping. We just look at, we make a plan, and what's the, you know, the number one thing in your region that could be a peril? And in my, where I'm at, I guess I don't have any problems, so it's all good. But no, I mean, if you're like near an earthquake fault or whatever, you know, I'm near that Air Force base, and I know one day it might go up in smoke, and that might be an issue. But in reality, you know, are you near a fault? Are you near a coast? Are you, you know, so everybody's urgent top issue that they prep for is different. And it's just making a plan and working the plan and just kind of plodding through. And also you could, in a sense, make it a hobby. And so it's not all consuming. And that's the thing, is just don't get into bondage with it, like Mike says. And, you know, just take one step at a time. And it's fairly simple, but it can be daunting because there's so many facets. Everything you think of, you're like, oh my gosh, you know, well, you can only bite off so much at a time.
And that's the thing, you know, for people that haven't done much, you know, to prepare at all at this stage, don't have to think in terms of you're trying to survive for a long, long period of time. Just think in terms of, okay, what if there's a natural disaster that you have to survive for a few days? You know, just start there. And that can be fun. It can be a hobby because let's face it, that can happen to anywhere, to anyone, and it can be any sort of disaster. So it may be that you just need to survive for a few days, so you're not dependent on the supermarket or whatever you have, Walmart over there or whatever it is, you know, to have to get stuff for, so that you can survive a few days. You've got the food. You can go, okay, there's no power. Yeah, I've got something I can light. You can keep, you know, lighting going at night, or if it's winter, I can keep warm. All of those things. Just think small. Start off in bite sizes and don't let it consume you. It certainly doesn't consume me. I mean, I'm not super duper prepared, you know. I've done a certain amount. nowhere near as much as I'd like to, but I've done some stuff. And I think that's what God just probably wants, is for us to do a certain amount and trust him for the rest. And so, you know, depending on how far you want to go with it, everyone should at least do something and be prepared to some level. Those are my thoughts anyway.
Yep, I absolutely agree.
Yeah, and just we're on to the just over an hour now, which means we're going a little bit longer than normal, but that's okay. I'm just wondering on your guys' thoughts on cooking. Like, you know, what do you have, you guys got sort of multiple ideas on that, or are you pigeonholed yourself when it comes to preparing food?
As long as the drive-thrus are working, I'm good. But no, that's as far as bug out goes, that I haven't put a lot of effort into that. I've got a little cook stove, but I haven't really thought a lot about that. You know, I haven't, that's an area that a facet that I'm probably pretty weak on, you know, and so that's, so Mike, what, you better why answer
I,
this.
Yeah, why I sort of brought that up is because I remember reading and listening to people who went through, say, I think one of them was Bosnia when there was a crisis over there, and there was another one in South America, and things like they were in, particularly in built up areas, and cooking was a major thing because they couldn't just have a big campfire, or there was no electricity or whatever. So they had to have very small little cookers that they could cook really quickly. So that's why I kind of went down the making some tin can hobo stoves and things, so you can boil up some water in 5 minutes, you know, have a little fire and you're gone, that kind of thing. So I think it's kind of, you know, to me, those are maybe issues that we need to think about, because that you can attract attention, and which may not be what you want to do either. And none of us knows the situation we're going to be in, but that was something I noticed that was common to a couple of people that I listened to. It was like, well, we learned how to make these little tin can cookers, and even bartering those with people, you know, here's a little tin can cooker for something or whatever, you know, bartering it, and cheap to make and easy. But those are the kind of things I think that maybe people need to think about, and that'll be pretty easy. Doesn't cost anything to make a little tin can cooker.
Yeah, I've got two thoughts on it. One is just about the energy output. So the majority of everyone's preparations in terms of food is going to be grains. And one of the things people don't really think about is the energy input to make those grains edible. So even if you soak grains, you have to soak them for a really long time for them to be able to even be, you know, digested in terms of not breaking your teeth. So you really got to think about, do I want something like a solo stove or a hobo stove, or do I get like a single burner stove for my propane tank and buy a couple of those? I think that's something definitely people have to think about. And also from the security perspective, especially if you're doing bug out stuff, there's a type of hole that you can dig. I forget the name of it, but it's basically a concealed fire. So the way you cook things is one aspect, but I did have another aspect to cooking, and I wrote an article on it, and it's about food lethargy. And so if you've got lots of grain, just like wheat and oats and rice, and you don't have anything to spice that up, that is going to be mentally exhausting on a person. And so you really need to think about spices. And there is a website that I have ordered from very frequently. It's not a very pretty website. It almost looks a little skittish, like you're gonna get ripped off or something. But it's herbalcom.com. So herbalcom.com. Herbalcom.com. And they sell virtually every single spice of the entire world by the pound. And each pound is anywhere from just like a couple cents to maybe $4. Comparatively with the spices that you see in the grocery stores, you get like a little tiny, I don't know, like smaller than the size of your hand, and that's like $5. You can literally get poundage of spices. And so if you think about rice, you can buy a 50-pound bag of rice for about $15 to $20 US. And you can make all sorts of rice. I can make Mexican rice. I can spice that up in a whole bunch of different ways. And again, thinking about mental preparedness, food lethargy is something you really need to think about with your cooking.
And then, of course, there's the whole growing and gardening and all that, which mm-hmm. is another aspect we can't really spend any much time on. But, you know, it would do well for people to even do a little bit of that, I think. You know, learn how to grow a few vegetables and different things, and that'll depend on where you live as to what you can grow. And even season to season, it varies a lot in terms of how well things will grow. So you maybe have a few things growing because one year they mightn't do as well as others and so on. But, yeah, having your own food supply. Of course, in the worst of situations, your gardens are liable to get raided and that sort of thing, which could be a bit discouraging, but... I guess you can't.
All my gardens get eaten by insects, so they always get raided.
Yeah, and birds. Yeah, you know, have some strawberries or blueberries, and you know, then you're protecting it from the birds, let alone from people that raid them. Yeah. So, Fred, I guess we'll have to look at closing up pretty soon. Have you got any thoughts on the gardening side of things?
Actually, I do. One of the things I am just chomping at the bit to, yes, pun intended, is to build an aquaponics system. And if you don't know what that is, basically it's a big tank underneath a grow bed. Fish live in the tank. Fish do their thing. They eat and they poop and they do things. Well, you pump that water into the grow bed, which is like pea gravel or something. And then the plants grow like mad. And my dream is to have an excess of food and it would be natural, organic, as just as good as you can get. And then the excess we would sell to high-end restaurants nearby, like in New Mexico, Santa Fe or whatever. And then when stuff came down, then that excess would be used for other people. And so that's what I would love to do, and just another project to get going on.
Excellent idea. So have you guys, because it'd be good if we could pray for our listeners and things, but before we do that, have you guys got any other thoughts that we, you know, you think we should get across before we look at closing up?
We covered a ton, and we kind of delved kind of deep if somebody isn't really prepared for this, but get going. Start a little bit at a time. Like you were saying, Tony, just, you know, work on 3 or 4 days, having 3 or 4 days worth of preparations, or a week, start it a week, and then build that out once it's balanced. And then build that out for 2 weeks, and then a month, and then maybe 3 months. I encourage people to try and shoot for a goal of 3 months of preparations. In other words, if you had to close your doors and couldn't go out, you could make it for 3 months. You know, if they're getting chased out of the house, that's a different story. But if you had to bug in, you can make it for 3 months. So at least just get started. That's what I have to say.
Yep, and just don't hesitate. You know, a lot of people, who knows how much time we have. I know things have always seemed precipitously close ever since, I don't know, probably years. I mean,
whoa.
For me, it's been like since 2014, 2015, I think. It was really getting heightened, but who knows how much time we have. But I think with everything going on around the world, you know, don't hesitate. Don't just be in denial, like, you know, nothing's going to happen. Just start small and don't hesitate on, you know, making the first step, because that's always the hardest.
Excellent. Good points, guys. Well, maybe it'll be a good chance now to close in prayer. So, Fred, I'll get you to start, and then Mike and I, we can add some more if we feel to. So let's close out with prayer.
Okay. Let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, I thank you for this conversation. Father, I just pray that it would be a blessing to you, that it would be a blessing to others, and it would be a lifesaver possibly to others. Father, I just pray that the people that are hearing this would take it seriously, and that they would take action on some of the things that you're tugging at their heart, and they should get going. And so, Father, we just lift up these folks to get going and make a reasonable plan and work the plan. And Father, the biggest preparation of all, and my YouTube channel, I have it, it's called The Ultimate Prep. And Father, that's salvation. It doesn't matter what happens, just that one decision on this life that matters. After that, it's all relative. And Father, that's that Jesus died for our sins and that we need to ask him for forgiveness. So Father, I just lift up people hearing this, and I pray that you would prompt them to make that decision, that you would give them the faith to believe that Jesus died for their sins, and the faith to, beyond that, the faith to actually prepare. I pray this in Jesus' name.
Amen.
And Lord, yeah, I pray that you give the listeners and give all of us, even those of us doing the show, wisdom on what directions to take ourselves, because it'll vary from person to person, that you will have a different plan for each person on how they should prepare. And I pray, Lord, that you would give us wisdom to know what your plan is for each of us as individuals, and that we wouldn't go beyond that, but that we would just stick to the blueprint that you give each one of us, because we're going to need your guidance in the days ahead. We're going to need to be able to hear from you. We're going to need to be able to get your specific guidance for us as individuals. So Lord, I pray that you would teach us how to do that now, to hear from you in this time where things are easier, so that we can hear from you when things get harder, because we'll know your voice. So show us what we should do, what we shouldn't do. Help none of us to become in bondage to this, but as Mike said earlier, because it's too easy to get into bondage to these things. So I pray, Lord, that you would give us balance and wisdom in what we should do as individuals.
Lord, just one more thing that I would add is just so that everyone knows, regardless of what happens in the flesh, we know that you are faithful in spirit. And so man will always think he is wise and strong, but you continually humble us. And so whatever may come, whether we lose our preparations, whether our plans don't go according to how we think that they're going to go, please help us to humble ourselves and remain in the faith, to know that you are always faithful. And by your son's blood, we will be resurrected with you. Amen.
Amen. So guys, how about, that was a great prayer, by the way. You give our listeners your contacts, you know, where they can find you on the internet. So we'll start with you, Fred.
Yeah, my YouTube channel is ET Prepper, and that's capital E, capital T, and then Prepper. E as in end, T as in times.
And mine is On Point Preparedness, and so you can find me just by searching that on Google. I've got a whole bunch of different outlets. I've got my onpointpreparedness.net website, which has a lot of survival articles. And then On Point Preparedness on YouTube, you'll find basically all my video style vlogs and things of that nature. Or if you want to look into Bible prophecy and Bible study, I do a lot of that there.
And of course, our channel is aminutetomidnight.com with midnight spelled M-I-D-N-I-T-E. And you can find all of our shows on our website as audio and also as video, and there's articles on the website as well, including, if you look up top, there's a tab on survival and prepping, and there's some articles and videos under that if you want to go there as well. And A Minute to Midnight is run entirely 100% by donations, and I want to say thank you to the people that donate to help A Minute to Midnight keep running, and you can do that on our website. And all the music used in the show is written, played, and recorded by me, and you can download free music on the website too. So I want to really thank you guys. This has been a lot of food for thought, I think, in this show. I've really enjoyed doing it, even though some of it's kind of heavy. But let's, you know, remember it can be fun to prepare to and learn different skills. So thanks, Fred and Mike, for being on the Minute to Midnight show. I think it's been well worth it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Tony.
Awesome, guys, and we'll do it again sometime.